Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we get into a conversation about the world of foreign exchange, that is the exchange of different currencies, and the business that colloquially is known as either Forex trading or FX trading. That's what we're going to be talking about today, and we're going to be talking to the CEO of a company called Future Forex, just getting into, you know, the state of that particular industry, and also maybe dispelling some of the myths, you know, around that particular industry. To make sense of it all, we're joined by Harrison Schurzer, who is the CEO of Future Forex. I think most people, if I remember correctly, refer to him as Harry. Harry, greetings to you today.
Madhua, great to be on, and excited to chat to you and your listeners.
Now, before we begin, you do realize that your industry does come with some not the best in terms of connotations and PR. What's it like? Before I ask you what is Future Forex, I'll just ask, what is it like heading up an FX trading business? Because I think some of your compatriots in the rest of the industry have not done well, in terms of, the reputation of the industry as a whole.
Yeah, Madhua, this is exactly why we entered the industry and what we're looking to change is I completely agree with you. I mean, the major banks, people aren't the biggest fans of them. And I think there's very good reason for that. The more and more we understand the industry, the more we understand how untransparent and unfair the banks really are on consumers. And so we're trying to find a way of being client-centric and helping consumers move money abroad in a more seamless and cheaper way.
Now, obviously, you've got the banks, right? And for the most part, it's not the banks, at least from a reputation point of view, because I think when it comes to reputation, banks, I'm not going to say fall short, but where, you know, they give a little bit of a bitter taste to customers is on, you know, fees, costs, you know, that type of thing. But just from a reputation point of view, at least you know that you've got a big bank, you know, that's doing this for you. But the platforms, you know, haven't done well in terms of reputation either.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is why regulation is correctly in the industry. So to be clear, what Future Forex does is not actually trading of Forex, which is typically where guys find scams are around and they find people are stealing money. What Future Forex does instead is it actually actions payments for people who want to move it abroad. So it's not a trading thing to gain money or to gain a profit. It's actually the process of sending rands to dollars, sending rands to pounds, any other reason, either as a small business or as a high net wealth individual that wants to send a decent amount of money abroad. We're able to do that better than the banks, cheaper than the banks, and with more service than the banks. So we are fully regulated, of course. We're authorized FSP, and it ensures that the credibility is there, as it should be when you're working with someone who moves your money.
That makes sense from that point of view. So now that we've reached this point, maybe we can get a little bit deeper into Future Forex itself. You've just described it for us as a business that specializes in the actual, you know, transmission of the money, from one country to another. Am I wrong in maybe clubbing you with, the remittance players of this world?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we are. We're a remittance player, but unlike, for example, Mukuru, who send money largely into Africa, our main client base are people sending money to dollars, to pounds, to euros, to countries outside of the African continent. Those are our main players. Of course, we can work within Africa, but that's where we differentiate ourselves a bit. And how we do it is we work with the banks, to be clear. We're not different to the banks. We simply group money for the banks and send the money via the banks, but we do all the processing, we do all the admin, and you're dealing with a fintech that can help you with everything while you have personalized support, rather than having to deal with, let's say, I won't use names here, one of the major banks where you have limited support. And if things go wrong, it falls on you as a consumer, despite not really understanding the industry particularly well.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, when you put it that way, it's the clubbing together of payments that I'm most interested in, because at least from a basic understanding point of view, I'm just going to call it rudimentary understanding had been that it's up to the central bank or the Reserve Bank of South Africa to be the one that, you know, that does that particular thing that you've just said, that at the end of the day, you sort of do your balance and your checks and you say, okay, fine, we've got, 5 billion that's meant to be going into the UK for the week. We've got X amount going into the US, let's make all of that happen. Let's settle the accounts. Let's make sure that the corresponding banks on the other side, you know, are getting what's theirs. And then we just settle all our accounts. So maybe you can help us to understand where a player like Future Forex actually, you know, comes in that ecosystem.
Yeah, Madhua, I'll start off by saying I don't think your understanding is rudimentary. I think it's very strong, actually, because that's 100% spot on. We don't group payments for consumers. That's not what we do. We're not going to take client A, client B, and client C and say, right, each of you are sending R1 million. We're going to send R3 million at once. No, we'll send it R1 million, R1 million, R1 million. We will send it independently for each individual. But where we add value and why we can get cheaper pricing than the banks is that we're providing the banks with lots of volume. We do over R1 billion every month through the banks. And what that means is that the banks don't need to go and find customers. They don't need to service customers. They don't need an account manager working with a customer, which isn't really what they want to be doing. They instead want to be a back-end system that are effectively doing the payments for you, but without much work, without actually facing the customer. And that's where we come in. We are happy to face the customer. This is what we specialize in. We specialize in strong levels of service, good rates, which is then passed on to the customer, which we're able to attain through our economies of scale. And so really, as a high net wealth individual or as a small business, small to medium sized business working in Forex, you're not going to get fantastic service from the bank naturally. They have too many customers. It's not their game servicing one by one individuals. It's our game. This is how we assist. And this is where we come in and make sure that it's as seamless as possible. And instead of being a nightmare sending money abroad, it becomes extremely easy.
Okay. Makes sense from that point of view. So how do you solicit business? How do you find the people that are actually, that you, this R1 billion that you are moving every month? I think at the beginning, I heard you saying that, you service businesses and that type of thing. What's the threshold of the type of business that is, moving money with you guys?
Yeah, let's start with how do we solicit business? And I think the answer to that, Madhua, is education. A lot of people don't realize how poorly they're being treated by banks. The fact that it's quite frankly unacceptable. When sending money, I mean, they might realize it, but they don't know there's an alternative. Maybe that's a better way. I see you laughing because you're thinking, of course I know how badly the banks treat me. It's just, what else can I do? And so it's all education. It's about ensuring that the public are aware that there's a better way of doing this. If you're sending money through your bank, there is quite simply a better way, but a lot of people just aren't aware of that. So they think, flip, there's no alternative. This is awful, but I don't know what else to do. I don't know how to make this better for myself. I don't know how to have a partner on my team that can actually help me. So the more we're able to get into the market and the more we're able to get either by word of mouth or by being on podcasts such as this one or any other form of educating people, that's how business tends to come to us. In terms of what sort of values we transfer, I'll start with the individual side. We like to do transfers of R100,000 plus. We do transfers all the way up to sort of R11 million. We apply for AIT approvals for clients, which is the approval from the Reserve or from SARS that you require in order to send more than R1 million abroad. We do that all as a free service. That's on the individual side. On the business side, we tend to work with businesses. There are exceptions, but we tend to work with businesses who do 5 million rand plus. Our sweet spot, I'd say, is between 5 million rand to 100 million rand per year in imports, exports, or any form of cross-border transactions. That's our sweet spot. That's where we can service people fantastically well. I'll say there are a lot of companies above 100 mil who are actually not being well serviced by the bank who also use us. But there are a number that are being serviced well because that's big enough for the banks to treat them well. You know, if you're doing 500 million rand a year, there's a good chance the bank has a whole team assisting you, in which case the truth is that we can potentially add value, but not particularly much because they're already being serviced well. If you're under 100 million rand as a business per year, the truth is you can probably almost certainly be being treated better unless you somehow know some insiders at the bank who are giving you priority treatment, which is highly unlikely. And so if you do have a small or medium-sized business, or if you're an individual sending over 100,000 rand, I really do think it's actually an error to work with the bank, not only in service, but also, as I said, in pricing, which I can dig a bit more into in a bit.
No, definitely. One of the things I'm then curious about, because you've just described the sweet spot to us, you know, of businesses that are between, let's call it 5 and 100 million rand in terms of import and exports per year, is how big is this market, right? Because at least from the number that you gave, it's an easy line to about 12 billion in a year that you guys are doing. But when we look at South Africa's balance of trade, you will know that, you know, that's probably almost a drop in the bucket. So for yourselves and that sweet spot that you're looking at, how big is that market?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the market is massive. I believe there are over 50,000 companies that do imports, exports within the range we require. So it's South African companies. So the market is massive. But what's really staggering is the fact that 95% of these companies are still using the major banks. In other words, not using a partner such as ourselves to do this for them, which is crazy. Basically, the market hasn't been made aware that there's a better way than working with a bank directly. I understand the most convenient is, oh, look, I've got a bank account. I may as well just use them for international payments. That's just the status quo. It makes sense from a practical point of view. But if you think how much not only money you're losing, but time you're losing on doing these transactions, becoming an expert, figuring out what your BOP code needs to be, etc., and then having issues with payments going through and having no one to speak to, it makes a lot more sense to invest that time up front to chat to someone like Future Forex and actually switch from the onset. So it's remarkable to me that 95% of businesses in South Africa are still using the bank directly. In my view, this is a paradigm shift waiting to happen.
You know what? You've characterized a number of issues. Just now you spoke about the time issue. I think you've also spoken about the fees and, you know, some of the admin, you know, that actually goes into this. Maybe what we can do is to do a practical example, right? Because now the person who is like me is curious about, okay, I'm hearing that there's mistreatment, but I need something concrete in my mind to make me understand, because there's probably people that are doing this, you know, on a daily basis, weekly or monthly, depending on the nature of their business, and they're probably going through certain processes, and they just think, oh well, it is what it is. This is just how, you know, what the process is. But maybe you could walk us through what a normal process is. I will give an example and then you can walk us through, you know, what it takes to send that money, you know, overseas, and perhaps the leakages along the way or the inefficiencies along the way where, you know, a business owner could be either saving or doing better with the service, right? So let's say I'm in the business of selling phones in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Nice Samsung phones in South Africa. I'm an independent distributor, and they're coming in straight from I don't know, straight from Dubai, but we're doing this trade in US dollars. Every month, I'm sending 5 million or so dollars, which is, I think, close on 100 million rand, depending, you know, every month. I'm at the top end of your what you call this. I'm at the top end of your threshold, and I'm doing that every month. It's a simple business. Every month I'm sending over this money, I get the phones, I'm selling them, and then that's the cycle that we typically go through. Yeah, so let's do it.
Yeah, Madhua, I'm happy to go through this. And what I'm going to do, in fact, is make it slightly smaller numbers so it's more practical for someone sending money out the country as an individual or as a business. But I'll give you the fees and the leakages and the process in any case. So let's say instead of that, you're sending 1 million rand out the country to buy phones or whatever the case is, or as an individual wanting to invest abroad, or you want to emigrate and you need to take your savings or whatever it is. Let's make it 1 million rand just so it's slightly closer to home rather than 100 million, which I think most people won't be sending. So if you're sending, let's say, 1 million rand, now with the bank, what will happen is you'll have to probably fill in forms either digitally or via a pen and paper. To be clear, with Future Forex, there's no pens and papers. It's all digital. And it's crazy that in today's day and age, pens and papers are still required. So you'd have to go into a branch, go in with a pen and paper, or maybe some banks are digital enough that you can, in fact, do it online. But then what happens is the pricing. Once you eventually are going to send money, you will get told, look, the fee to do this is, let's say, 1,000 rand. That's what they'll tell you. They'll say it's 1,000 rand. You think 1,000 rand, that's fine. If I'm sending 1 million rand out the country, 1,000 rand is no issue, which I'd agree with. It's not a big amount of money. They'll say the processing fee is 1,000 rand. What they don't tell you, and where they're untransparent in fees, is that when sending the money, they'll say, right, it's 1,000 rand processing fee, and the rate is, let's say, 19.38, let's say, as an example. And you go, and if you're a little bit more astute, you might go onto Google and go, but hold on, Google's showing me that the rate right now is 19 to 1. Why are they giving me 19.38? And this is where they make their proper money, is on what's called a spread, which is the difference between the exchange rate and the rate that they give you. They won't even call it a fee. They won't say, we're charging a fee here, therefore we're going to give you 19.38. They'll just say, here's your rate, 19.38. And most people won't look further than to sort of say 19.38, yeah, fine, keep going. Meantime, if you accept a rate of 19.38 when the spot rate is 19, that comes to 2% as a fee. 38 cents on 19 rand is 2%. 2% on 1 million rand is 20,000 rand. I'm sure you'd agree with me, Madhua, that if they had invoiced you 20,000 rand to do this transaction, you'd probably be more keen to look elsewhere, or you'd be like, that's insane. 20,000 rand you want to charge me for this. This is how the banks get a lot of business, is they're not transparent about the fact that they're giving a higher rate than the rate on the market. They're not transparent about what that translates to in rand terms. And this is where clients leave thinking, I paid 1,000 rand to send money abroad. But really, no, you paid 21,000 rand. You paid 20,000 in a spread and an additional 1,000 in processing fee. And this is where Future Forex is coming in and saying, right, we will be transparent on exactly what we're going to charge you start to finish, all inclusive. There's going to be no hidden fees which you don't even know about after the transaction. And in doing so, it'll be far cheaper than the banks. So while these banks seem very affordable with their sort of 500 to 1,000 rand processing fee, that's negligible relative to what they're really charging as a spread.
Okay. Makes perfect sense. I've done a bit of traveling, and I've had to make, you know, certain payments. You know, when, who knows, you're at an airport or you are in another country, and the nice thing about some of these POS machines is that they will tell you on the spot, okay, fine, we're about to charge you. Well, for this $5 payment, for this $20 that you're about to pay, we are going to be doing it at 19.2, and you have to press accept, on the POS machine. So I can understand, I guess, on a micro level, a very micro level, what you're talking about. I can also attest. to the many forms that have to be filled out when trying to exchange money, you know, in this country, when trying to receive money from abroad, you know, in this country. I do a little bit of business internationally, and when money comes, nothing happens until some long form is filled in. So it is a bit of a cumbersome process, and I'm using very micro examples, right? Just on a consumer level. Obviously, you guys are doing businesses, but on a consumer level, I remember I was in Thailand last year, and one of the things that struck me the most about being in Thailand is that they have what in South Africa you'd call a bureau de change. Like at every two or three blocks, you have these things. They look like little kiosks, and you don't like the checks. Like what you need to do to change money is minimal. Like a process that would take me like half an hour at a bank here in South Africa literally takes like 2 minutes, because they literally just say, "Hey, oh, okay, here's the money. Here's the rate. Do you like the rate? Great. Here's your cash in local currency." But here you have to fill in the form. You have to tell people, you know, when you came into the country. You have to tell people, you know, you have to tell people your source of funds. Like there's a whole barrage of processes that people have to go through just on an individual level and for small amounts of money. So trying to extrapolate to a somewhat larger amount of money, like R1 million, the amount of admin that goes into that process, as well as how much the spread, you know, a small, you know, 20 to 30 cents, you know, difference, you know, especially on big volumes, ends up being quite a sizable little profit for the bank, eh?
Exactly. No, that's 100% it. And I do want to just mention that while the banks are largely to blame for the poor service and the poor and what you go through, there is something to be said for the fact that South Africa do make international payments harder than, for example, it would be in Thailand. This has got to do with exchange controls in South Africa, and this is why, as Future Forex, we do that all for you. We're not saying that it's going to be as seamless as you give us the dollars, we give you the rands, end of story. But all the paperwork and everything that's required is done by us. We have an account manager that will call you and understand your business and do everything so that effectively it's completely outsourced for you. Because you've seen, Madiwa, it's a nightmare. You have to go into a bank, spend half an hour on forms. You get something wrong, it's on you, it's not on them. They're not going to say, "Oh, we'll recover that for you." No. All of this stuff is why an expert makes sense. And when you have an expert that's actually charging you less than going to a bank directly, it becomes even more of an obvious choice relative to working with the bank that don't really support you.
Okay, cool. That makes perfect sense. A couple of things before we let you go, Harry. This sounds like quite an interesting niche that you've found for yourselves. What does the competitive landscape, you know, look like, you know, for you guys? The obvious competitor, the one that we've spoken about throughout today's conversations, obviously the banks. But outside of that, you know, who else do you consider to be competition?
Yeah, it's a great question. Now, luckily for us, because of the difficult exchange controls in South Africa, the likes of Wise and Revolut are not competitors of ours because they don't actually send money out of South Africa. If you're trying to send money from rands to dollars using Wise, for example, you won't be able to do so. And this is why we take a lot of inspiration from what Wise, Revolut, etc. have done abroad, because they've really challenged the banks. They've made the HSBCs of the world lose a ton of business because they're easier, more friendly, they care more about user experience, they're client-centric, whereas the banks for generations haven't been, and that's been okay because there was no one to challenge it. In South Africa, that same competitor doesn't quite exist. There's no Wise or Revolut in South Africa. And that's exactly who we're hoping to be, but with a bit of nuance, understanding that South Africa has more complexities than abroad sending money. We will have account managers as well, or do have account managers as well, that assist people. So you have people if you need them and the technology there if you don't. We have an online platform. We do everything as you would expect, Wise to if you've ever used them abroad. But luckily, the competitive landscape is, as I said, ripe for disruption in South Africa, which is really exciting.
It sounds like there's opportunity, you know, for maybe other people to come into the space, because, like you said, these 50 or so thousand businesses, that's quite a sizable market that businesses could be addressing and taking advantage of. The other thing I was curious about, you're the CEO.
Yeah.
How long has the company been around for? Are you the founder?
Yeah, I'm the co-founder. There are two of us, and it's been around for 4.5 years now. And Madhua, I completely agree with you. In a perfect market, there would be a lot of companies that pop up and try to do this, right, and try to assist, because there's a huge opportunity here, as you've said. But because of the barriers to entry, being the licensing, both in terms of being an FSP and what's called a TOC license, because of the relationships you require with the bank, it's not quite that easy to get into the market. And so we're in this lucky position where we in the market, we fully trusted by the banks, we do huge volumes already. And now we're trying to actually make a difference. Whereas the banks, because of these huge walls and barriers to entry, the banks have been able to get away with underservicing clients, in my view, and overcharging clients for years and years. And finally, we are looking to put a change to that.
Okay, it makes perfect sense. For someone who is looking to get into it, keen to understand your background and maybe your co-founder's background, I understand that you're an actuary, which means that at some point you've probably passed through some of the major financial houses of this country. Just keen to understand that much. And I guess the impetus, to start something like this and how you got over some of those barriers that you've just spoken about now.
Yeah, so that's correct. My background is as an actuary, and I remember my my director once saying, I was at EY, and my director at EY once said, Harry, you're too extroverted to be an actuary. that was what I got in my feedback. They said, you're doing a great job, but you're just too extroverted for this, because my favorite part of the job was explaining to people how things worked and why and what should be done, etc. And I've always kind of wanted to be someone that makes a big difference. And as an actuary, you can make a huge difference naturally. But working in a corporate environment, you do tend to be a cog in what is a bigger machine. And I thought, there's got to be a better way to benefit South Africans. There's got to be a way to make a real difference to people in this country. And one of the things that we identified as we started the business, we started identifying there was a huge, huge issue with the international payment space in South Africa. People are underserviced, and this was a place that we could make a serious, serious difference to people. So we've grown to a staff of 75 people. We have thousands of clients, and we're finally starting to show people that there's a better way to do things. And it's becoming more and more clear to people that the major banks are not quite cutting it. They're far off the mark. And it's one of those where you had those early adopters where you had to kind of explain to them why they should be doing this, why this makes sense. But at this point, it's people saying, how quickly can I change and why? Which is great. This is what we're hoping for. We're hoping people start to understand that they don't have to be held captive by the banks any longer for international payments.
And from a funding point of view, the other curiosity, this is something that we like to explore on this platform, is business models and how they are funded. For a business such as yours, what are the funding requirements? And by that I mean, if you're a bank, right, you must have a certain amount of money just sitting before someone gives you a license, for example, right? Once you start taking deposits, you can start lending. There's all of this stuff, but you must have a certain amount of money before someone gives you a license. So when it comes to this type of business, like what Future Forex is doing, did you have to have, I guess, a certain amount of money sitting before they gave you a license? And on a day-to-day, what's the actual expense? Because at the end of the day, you're moving other people's money. Is it a staffing cost? Is it a technology cost? Like, what's actually burning cash for future Forex?
Yeah, a couple of really great questions. And if I'm going to go into the history books and look back in time, we started working through a different intermediary, not under our own intermediary. We were sort of what's called a juristic representative of a different intermediary. And as a result, the funding requirements weren't there for us. They were there for what was, I guess, our parent initially. But as we started getting the licensing and as we started funding ourselves, we broke off from that company. And that was about, I could be getting this wrong, but I think around 3 years ago, we had our own license, et cetera, and just shifted all our clients over. So from a funding point of view, there are requirements needed, particularly to be an FSP, a financial service provider. The government wants to check your liquidity ratios and the ability to make payments if something were to go wrong. So we've got all of those, that funding, and we're very healthy. We're in a very healthy cash position, luckily. In terms of where are we burning cash, it's all of the above that you mentioned. It's staffing costs, it's technology costs, because we're obviously building out a new state-of-the-art online platform, online Forex platform, which is going to be more similar to that on Revolut or Wise than that on the major banks locally. So you'll see that the banking platforms currently look like they were built pre 2000, probably because they were, and we're building one with which is really focusing on client experience and ease of interaction, or we've built one rather that focuses on ease and client interaction, and the reviews have been really, really strong. But that doesn't come without cost. So at this point, we've sunk a lot of money into ensuring that we have the best possible product on the market, and now we just want to show clients and keep iterating based on client feedback to make sure it's as optimized as possible for anyone who wants to use it, be it an individual or be it a small to medium-sized business.
Okay, makes perfect sense. And I like the fact that, I guess you started out underneath, representing another company, and then you make that switch. That's actually an interesting one, because I've actually spoken to a number of people that are trying to start some type of financial services business, and there's usually a huge lag, especially in the licensing process, where you're sort of sitting and waiting to start trading. But, I guess your route was, if we can be trading under someone else whilst we are trying to cross our T's, dot our I's, at least the business is moving, in the interim. Before we let you go, one of the things that I think we didn't speak about, because we've spoken quite a bit about what it takes to send money out of South Africa, right? That's, your outbound transactions. Are you involved in inbound transactions?
Yeah, we are. We do both outbound and inbound. Currently, we only do to and from South Africa. So if you're doing, for example, from England to America, that's not something we currently assist with. But if you're bringing money into rands or out of rands, then we can assist with that.
Where's, from at least the current state of the business, are you more weighted towards outbound or inbound?
Definitely towards outbound, because there are, it's easier to sort of convince an importer to switch, because they're the ones who know the hassle. It's slightly easier bringing money in. There's slightly less paperwork, slightly less to be done when you bring money into the country. But when you take money out of the country, it's an absolute nightmare, and you need a random SARB approval sometimes, which the bank doesn't really help you with. And now you've got to become an expert at how to apply for a SARB approval, which is something we do for our clients. As a complimentary service. And it's just a matter of, as an importer or as someone taking money out of the country, it's an absolute nightmare. If you're bringing money into the country, it's still difficult and it's still easier using Future Forex, but at least it's slightly easier in that the money arrives at your account and all you've got to do is convert it at a poor cost typically. But from an ease point of view, it's not as difficult as taking money out. And for that reason, we're more weighted towards outbound transactions.
Okay, that makes sense from that point of view. And then lastly, is there's a statement that I once heard. I was talking to a group of mates that are all professionals, And everyone, you know, is a private wealth client and above. You know, I'm using a micro example, trying to see if we can draw some parallels to what's going on in the business sector. But what we were, the conversation was about the fact that private wealth banking is great, but it falls short in many respects, because usually you have, you know, private bankers that are probably dealing with maybe 50 to 100 of you, whoever you are, out there in the market. But the service is much better if you're a private wealth client, because you're probably dealing with higher amounts of numbers, and your bankers probably have a much smaller portfolio, so they can extend, they can give you a little bit more love, you know, in the market. I think you alluded to it earlier on, you know, around the person who's maybe constantly sending out like 500 million rand. Is that also the case, what the example that we've just given, is that also the case in a business sense, that the bigger your book past a certain point, the more that you're likely not going to be having the issues that you and I have spoken about throughout this discussion?
Yeah, absolutely, Madiwa. If you are, let's say, Anglo-American, I can imagine you've got a team at the bank you work with who are working on your book day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, because it's so much volume that's going through that, that of course it makes perfect sense to put a whole team on it, and the bank will still be make enough revenue to justify a massive team. Where we find that line starts getting hit is very loosely the 100 million rand per year mark. Once you're doing more than 100 million rand per year as a business, often you tend to be treated well. We've been surprised how many times you haven't been treated well, even in that instant, but this is a bank by bank situation, a client by client situation, where sometimes guys with significantly over 100 million aren't treated well, but then guys with slightly under 100 mil might be treated better. But in general, that seems to tend to be the mark where people are treated a bit better, which is why I say 5 million to 100 million is really our sweet spot, where we add huge amounts of value to companies, because even if you think you're being treated relatively well, you're probably not relative to how you could be treated.
Okay, so that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion, you know, just talking to Harry about what's going on in the foreign exchange market, specifically, you know, the just exchanging, you know, rands into US dollars or US dollars into rands, but mainly, you know, inbound and outbound, you know, of the ZAR or the rand, just, you know, giving some examples just around some of the issues, you know, that come out when you're trying to send money or to receive money, you know, in and out of South Africa. Some of the things that he mentioned, you know, just now, is the fact that you can actually help yourself when it comes to admin costs, when it comes to time, you know, when it comes to fees. Also explaining to us, you know, what the spread is and where the opportunity cost comes, you know, from that point of view. And also just the fact that a lot of people go about these processes just thinking that that is the only option that's available to them, because you're doing it through your bank and you probably think that no one can do it better than your bank. But he was actually saying that they've modeled their business around, you know, the likes of, I think he said, Wise and Revolut, you know, that have been challenging some of the large banks internationally, such as HSBC, around some of these, you know, some of these issues. I think for me, it will be interesting to see how the space develops. It feels like it's only a matter of time before this. Obviously, South Africa is very, very, very early, you know, on that curve. But at some point, you know, there's a lot of things that people are saying around globalization being in a moment where people are sort of doubting it. But I really do think that we're going to, you know, continue to see growth in international trade. I don't think that's going to come down. And as long as you have people, you know, buying and selling goods from different countries, a country like South Africa, there's a lot that's going on, a lot of import businesses, a lot of export businesses. So there'll continue to be that demand. And for me, I'm just looking many, many years into the future to say that at some point, I do think that the big banks will come calling, and we might see some consolidation in the space where they try and take in, some of this capability in-house. And instead of building out their own teams, they'll probably go out and look for, such companies, to acquire. That's one. And then I think lastly, interesting just to hear the journey of a business such as Future Forex, and hearing about an extroverted actuary, such as Harry, and the fact that he's decided that this is the hill that he's going to climb, and challenge the banks when it comes to sending and receiving money in rands. So that's been it. Thank you so much. We're talking to Harrison Schertzer, who is the CEO of Future Forex. He is a co-founder. The business has been around for about four and a half years. Harry, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Madhua. It's great to chat to you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.